Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Better late than never, I hope. Or perhaps in this case, better late than not at all. New technology is always fun, and sometimes trying to understand it gets a little out of hand. It did this evening. I'm working with learning the new gizmo that will bring a little more telephony into the mix, especially on our Fridays on the front porch. But, you know, it got away from me. That's my fault. So, we're late getting the program started. It is 21 minutes past the hour on this here 8th day of October, 2014. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That is where, of course, you will find access to the chat room, in which a number of folks are already enjoying a merry little evening. Good evening to Carol Baker, our new news ninja. Good evening, Jeremy. Good evening, John, Gav, M. Brandt, Mr. Gibson, Dippy, Texas T, Waggy, and Will from Chicago. Welcome aboard. One and merry all. So, yeah, that's what I was doing. Oh, by the way, last night, you may recall, was Have a Show on Me Night by Ed. This evening is Have a Show on Me Night by Robert. And we appreciate that very, very kindly. All of us, because this is, after all, a listener-supported effort that keeps everything rolling. Well, thank you ever so kindly, Randy. Randy says, you do great, Bob, for a Luddite. Damning with faint praise. Yes, indeed. And thank you also very kindly to... thank you to Christopher in the Northwest Territories. Thanks, one and all. This is Prayer Meeting Wednesday, of course. And, oh, program notes. No program tomorrow night, no program Friday night. Why? Well, because tomorrow I will be spending the entire day getting ready to fly to New York on Friday. And the plane leaves at 7 a.m. And you know, you got to be there an hour before. And that means leaving here an hour and a half before. So that's 7, 6, 5. That means out of here at 4:30. So I will actually be in bed during program hours. So just so you'll know. So no program tomorrow, no program Friday. I will be live with Chris Hayes on Friday evening during his program. I don't know for sure, but I'm guessing it will be toward the latter part of the program, the way it has been with his other guests during this All in America Coal Country feature. I hope everyone will tune in. I'll be there. And then we'll crank it back up again on Monday with a regular, notice I didn't say normal. Normal's only a setting on a dryer. A regular broadcast week. So there we go. This program is brought to you by Robert, and thank you very kindly. We do try to raise funds every evening, and the funds that we try to raise, $150, is based upon an average, ordinary broadcast month. So technically, we will fall behind Thursday and Friday. Christopher took care of tomorrow. Let's try to take care of Friday this evening. Maybe get out in front a little bit. $10 by 15 people, $15 by 10 people, one at 150, one at 100, and one at 50. Any way you want to do it is fine. And remember, the Sparky's premium remains on the table. Anybody who kicks in $100 gets a gift package from Sparky, your choice of locally grown pistachios from California or the oh, my God, what our buddy Tom called a meditation on hot pepper cheese, smoky ghost pepper cheese. Yum, yum. I can attest to it myself. So that's out there. And the PayPal button is at the newly redesigned headonradionetwork.com. And I encourage you to run by there. We will have a lot more functionality there. We had to John Fox worked like a maniac just getting this thing up, but there will be more functionality coming to it, more interactivity, more opportunities for people to participate and have fun on the website, that kind of thing coming soon. Okie doke? Yeah. And again, thanks to John Fox for doing that. Now, it is, and frankly, you know, after being up to my elbows in electronics and molecules and stuff like that, electrons, I don't know. I ain't got it in me to bring out the preacher guy this evening. I'm sorry. I just don't. It's not that I'm mailing it in. Just sometimes he makes me feel so creepy. But, I mean, on any given Wednesday night, I end the program and go shower in bleach if I've done it, because he's real. So we'll take a pass on that. But it was kind of interesting because our buddy Michael in Madison anticipated where I was going to go. I don't know how that works, but it does. I have an email here from Michael. He says, I trust you've seen that clip that everyone can't stop talking about. If not, I just posted it to my Facebook page. Tell me Sam Harris's quip about an abortion clinic bombing that happened in 1984 didn't make you kick furniture. Yes. I've yet to hear anybody call him out specifically on that, but to me, that set off my bullshit alarm. Well, there's a whole lot about that entire exchange that sets off mine. And I wanted to kind of, since it is prayer meeting Wednesday, I wanted to go back and sort of revisit it because of the manifest degree of just getting stuff wrong that's in there. Because, and we touched on this a little bit last night, but this idea, is this grabbing people's attention because it's a bunch of alleged liberals allegedly squabbling between themselves? Is that what it is? I don't know. But the fact of the matter is, I've seen Michael's Facebook postings on it. I've seen our friend Flavio's Facebook postings on it. And I tend to agree with them. I mean, I don't think you can talk about the barbarian Muslims without somewhere along the way looking into the barbarity of Christianity. Almost from its, I mean, this is, Christianity is a religion that was born out of murder and conspiracy and torture. Now, of course, its early adherents decided that that was really cool if you were doing it to, you know, be like Jesus. Yep. Oh, really? You're going to kill me for? Don't you have any lions? I mean, one of the early tales, and it's probably apocryphal. I mean, this is most of it's made up anyway. Is of who? Saint Peter getting ready to be crucified, and demanding, because, you know, you can do that, demanding that he be crucified upside down in an X form instead of a true crucifix, because he was not worthy of being murdered the same way that his Lord and Savior was. And, of course, if you believe that all actually factually happened, I've got a piece of the true cross you can have here for cheap. But that's... It's interesting to me because, among other things, there is so little talk about the behavior of Christianity within the context of this discussion. Is it because that happened some several hundred years ago or a thousand years ago? Oh, we're past that. We get a pass for that now. You know, it wasn't 400 years ago that a visitor to London would go across a bridge and see people's heads stuck on poles on the bridge, just as a gentle reminder not to cross her nibs. The guillotine was last used when? I think our buddy Flavio pointed out the guillotine was last used in France in the late 1970s. So let's not get so high and mighty. And among other things, I noticed a story on National Petroleum Radio today. Oy. West Virginia Public Radio, brought to you by a generous grant from the Walton Family Educational Foundation, dedicated to destroying public education as quickly as we possibly can. We're the Walton Family Education Foundation, WaltonK12.evil. Can't you just imagine the public radio conversation that was taking place there? Hey, the Walton heirs want to give us a bunch of money. Yeah? Yeah, they're using their K-12 Education Foundation is the front group. You know, that's the foundation that wants to do away with public education as surreptitiously as possible. Well, how much are they offering? A lot. Cool, we want to do it too. We're public radio. We'll take money from anybody. We're Northrop Grumman. Arms merchants to the world. But I did notice a story on NPR in which, and it's a little bit offensive, in which, and understand this in the context, please, of the concept of religious privilege that we sort of began examining last night. Oh, I'm sorry. I got that website wrong. Will from Chicago noting. No. That's walton.k12.borg.evil. Yes. Will's really banging on all eight this evening and batting 1,000. Northrop Grumman, an equal opportunity destroyer. Yeah. Anyway, before I wander off into the weeds, we were talking about religious privilege some last night, and I think what I heard on public radio was an example thereof. Because, lo and behold, because of the head-lopping ISIL people, NPR just had to talk to somebody from the Muslim community who would explain that they denounced in the strongest terms possible the head lopping. And that they denounced in the strongest terms possible the version of Islam, and that's not their Islam, and Islam doesn't really teach that. And you know what? I'm okay with all of that. My only question is, why is it we have to get this? Why is it we have to go and find and trot out some imam, and I'm not being critical here. I'm not being critical of the imams. There are some several, there are 1.8 billion or something Muslims on the face of this planet, and most, the vast majority, probably in excess of 99% of them, have no head-lopping desires whatsoever. But every time something like this happens, we have to go trot out some imams from somewhere saying, this is not Islam, please don't kill us in our sleep, please don't beat us up on the subways, we're not all like this, please, pretty please, peace be upon you, don't kill us because we're Muslim, because we were born that way and raised that way, just like, you know, you guys are raised Christian or Jewish or Hindu or whatever. It's like the tolling of a clock at the top of the hour. And yet, when some obnoxious, hate-filled, disgusting Christian does something evil, I'm not aware of cases where NPR or anybody else reaches out to say, excuse me, would you mind being a spokesman for all the Christians out there and explain that these people aren't... No! No! I mean, every once in a while you'll get somebody saying, yeah, yeah, that Westboro Baptist bunch. Well, no, not so much. Yeah, they're crazy and hate-filled. But the one thing they won't say is, they aren't Christians. Whereas the Muslims are leaned upon to say that the people doing that kind of, doing the head lopping aren't real Muslims. When in fact, Islam has a much less centralized structure than does any particular flavor of Christianity. It may even be less centralized than Judaism. And Judaism is somewhat decentralized. I guess there's a home office for some of the sects, but, there's no pope of Judaism, and there's no pope of Islam. Although in both cases, they apparently have their fair share of Jerry Falwell types. So just a little something to consider as we go forward into the conversation, and I think the conversation should be open on that topic. Why is it, or better yet, is it a function of religious pressure that a majority Christian country will demand that the Muslims in its midst denounce bad behavior when none of those self-same Christians are ever asked to denounce bad Christian behavior? There were a million excess deaths by October of 2004 in George W. Bush's war of choice against the people of Iraq. A million people were dead by October 2004 who would not have been dead, according to Johns Hopkins University, had George Bush not started that war. Now, George Bush ran around telling everybody what a Christian he was. Remember when he was in Jerusalem and he told, what was it, the Jerusalem Post or Haaretz, told him, God told me to strike Saddam, and I did. And now God's telling me to bring peace to Israel, and you got to let me. Yeah? Nobody ever called on Christianity to denounce George Bush's Christianity and say that George Bush wasn't really a Christian. Now, there were people who said that. You know, he's a baptized member, George W. is, of the United Methodist faith. And the United Methodist, whatever it is, asked him very nicely not to start a war he didn't have to start against the people of Iraq. What was George Bush's response? He checked in with the Southern Baptist Convention to see if he couldn't get a an endorsement of his Iraq escapade, bloodthirsty thing. And he did, with the Southern Baptist Convention saying, well, we have looked into this, and it turns out that PETA owned a sword. And the only reason you own a sword is if you might have to hurt somebody with it. So it's okay for George to go over there and in our name, in your name, and in my name, and in the name of Jesus, oh, get away. See how easily he gets out? Start a war against a bunch of people who never did anything to us. Yeah. So, just a... you know, a little something to ponder within the context of this prayer meeting Wednesday. We have other ponderables. Oh, yes. We have, of course, the ongoing Christian opposition to having to the legal ability of two people having nothing to do with any Christian denomination whatsoever who want to marry each other, marrying each other. The principal opponents of that are Christianity. Our dear friend Jude sent along a link earlier just asking, would you please discuss this one, Bob? I don't understand how Justice Kennedy could do this. And, of course, putting justice in front of the name of Anthony Kennedy is kind of, I think that's kind of funny anyway. And what she's talking about is Justice Anthony Kennedy taking action today to prevent people of the same gender from marrying each other in Idaho Stan. Because, you see, a federal appeals court yesterday banned or struck down, ruled unconstitutional, Idaho's same-sex marriage ban. It's defense of marriage. Remember these DOMAs? Defense of marriage amendment. In which the God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christians of that state declared that, or Mormons, declared that their Jesus didn't want the homos getting married and made it a part of state law in direct contravention of the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution of the United States. That federal appeals court action was triggered by action by the Supreme Court of the United States on Monday, saying that they weren't interested in hearing appeals involving other federal appeals to the rights of people who love each other to get married, with or without without the sanction of a church. Because remember, in all of this marriage equality discussion, there is not one iota, not one shred of anything that says that, for instance, the hate-filled bigots of the Southern Baptist Convention are going to have to officiate at a gay wedding. Nobody has ever said a word about forcing a Roman Catholic priest to bless the union of a couple of women. Uh-uh. But because of religious privilege, people like the people who run the religious theocracy that is the state of Idaho think that they have the right to lord it over everyone else, because, you know, they got a book that says so. It's a book that was written by people who didn't understand why it rained. But, you know, I mean, parts of that book were stories of people who didn't know how to smelt iron. That's why it's called Bronze Age thinking. Yeah. So when the Supreme Court refused to hear those cases, essentially declaring it moot, I mean, they just rendered it moot, then that meant that the federal appeals court rulings stood, which meant that federal appeals court courts in circuits, and remember, there was no split in the circuits. None of the cases that had gone to the Supreme Court had come from a circuit that had ruled in anything in any other way except to say that, yeah, these defensive marriage acts, these acts of legislated barbarity and bigotry and Bronze Age prejudice, there wasn't a split. All the federal circuits had said, you know, it's got to go. 14th Amendment says it's got to go. And I suspect that's part of the reason that the Supreme Court didn't take it up. The Supreme Court likes to take up cases where there is a split in the circuit. Let's say the 11th Circuit, isn't that down there in New Orleans, says that that Texas has the right to get in the way of an acknowledged constitutional right on the part of a woman to deal with the workings of her reproductive system, and yet the 9th Circuit in San Francisco says, well, hell no! Well, then you got a split in the circuit, right? And the court will often take up that. But there was no split in the circuit. All the circuits were in agreement. So the Supreme Court Monday said, bah, not worth the time. Everybody's in agreement. There's a consensus. There's more than a consensus here. There's unanimity. Which meant that Idaho was in play. And Nevada. And so consequently, Idaho is in the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, which is headquartered in San Francisco. And the 9th Circuit said, everybody can get married now. Pretty clear. Except the theocrats and the bigots, you know, the Christians in Idaho, well, and the Mormons too, said, uh-uh. So they asked the 9th Circuit to put its ruling on hold while these Christians, these theocrats, these bigots, continue to litigate the issue, trying to force their twisted religious beliefs on the rest of the people who might not be that way in Idaho, who might not be Christians or Mormons. And so consequently, not having any luck in San Francisco, the Idaho officials went running off to the Supreme Court of the United States, and the way they work it out, they share out the responsibility for injunctive relief among the circuits, among the individual justices. And I guess they gave the 9th Circuit this term to Anthony Kennedy. And so the Idaho bigots went running off to the Supreme Court and said, please, oh, please don't make us start marrying the homos yet. We got traditional family values, marriages here that'll just be a falling apart left and right. Oh, merciful Jesus, Anthony Kennedy. Save us, Anthony Kennedy. You're our only hope. And so he acquiesced to the will of the bigots. And it's not as big a story, because it hasn't gotten there yet. But even here in West Virginia, Judge Robert Chambers, a U.S. District Court judge, for the Southern District of West Virginia. The Fourth Circuit, well, was part of the was part of those circuits that were in agreement with each other, and whose cases the Supreme Court refused to hear. So that means that marriage equality should be the law of the state of West Virginia. But see, that's another part of religious privilege. These weirdos hold an implied threat over the heads of each and every of the several states. You know, they're still upset about the places where marriage equality exists, whether it be New Jersey or Massachusetts or Iowa. And implicit in their opposition, based on the way they have behaved with regard to women's reproductive rights, is that they might just be willing to kill over it. So instead of issuing a ruling in West Virginia, Judge Robert, that says, hey, look, everybody gets to get married now. Marriage equality is the law of the land. Shut up, you right-wing troglodytes. Get over it and go and enjoy your traditional family marriages, you know, before they crumble because of, right, no. He could have said, it's the law of the land, shut up. But he didn't. He has given a couple of county clerks in the state of West Virginia and our atrociously awful carpetbagger attorney general, who used to be a lobbyist for the pharmaceutical industry, I think he's actually from New Jersey. This guy, at the time he was nominated to run as a Republican for attorney general, this dude, his name's Morrissey, and not the good one who made music. This guy wasn't even a member of the West Virginia bar. He has since, by some miracle, become a member of SAME, but he wasn't at the time he was nominated to run. Because, you know, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and all the right-wing front groups just kind of shoved him along and said, yeah, right. Because, you know, a liberal Democrat was out there doing things like filing suits against corporations to make them pay up for ripping off West Virginians. Turned us into a judicial hellhole. That's what the U.S. Chamber of Commerce calls West Virginia every chance it gets. It's a judicial hellhole! So, essentially, Anthony Kennedy had the power to hear temporary injunctive stuff, and today, he really put the junk in injunctive relief. Because, you see, the 19th century BCE fundamentalists in this country are going to have to be dragged kicking and screaming into the 21st CE. That's a hell of a big leap for them, too. So people who want to enjoy the full fruit of the constitutional liberties accorded under the Constitution of the United States and its several amendments must still wait. God, it's like that movie line. There they come to Casablanca, and wait, and wait, and wait. So y'all gay folks out there in the stand states, y'all can just wait some more. I mean, you gone this long without being all married up, without any constitutional rights. What's another day or another week or another month or another year? Y'all be fine. Because, you know, when it's legal in 50 states, it just gonna mean, just going to mean that America's going to fall right apart. God may start throwing lightning bolts all over the place. Yeah. Devin noting. Oh, cry me an effing river, you Christo fascists. Yeah. But see, that's religious privilege. Because while correctly, some might point out that there are aspects of, say, Islam and Judaism, because we're talking about Christian, because, you know, Christianity, Islam, and Judaism are the three big monotheisms. Judaism invented it. The Christians stole it and hybridized it. And the Muslims came along and offered sort of a variation on a theme. And there are words in the holy books of each that may be arguably read as condemning homosexual behavior. But for the most part, only the Muslims are called upon to defend themselves when some Muslim or group of Muslims begins to misbehave. Even in the recent slaughter of Gaza in Operation, it was called in English Protective Edge, but I read another translation from the Hebrew said that it was something much more descriptively Orwellian. Even in that, the people who were, and I was one of them, who were critical of the slaughter of Palestinian people, you know, you don't reach over and say, because it was a state action, not a religious action. So there was daylight between the two spaces as wide as can be, because there were lots of people of the Jewish faith saying, no, I don't agree with this. Naturally, the people who wanted to bomb the Gazans until they just no longer existed had lots of fun names that they wanted to call the Jewish people who disagreed with it, self-hating Jews being one of the big ones. And if you didn't happen to be Jewish and were opposed to the slaughter in Gaza, you were just an anti-Semite, which was a bullshit argument. But for some reason, Muslims can't get that kind of separation. You know, I mentioned a couple of nights ago that John Fox was in a state of extreme sport bliss, because his beloved South Sydney Rabbitohs, the Bunnies, had won a championship in the rugby league for the first time in ages. Well, they beat another club, goes by the name of the Bulldogs, whose demographic includes a whole lot of Muslims, and with whom the club and with which community the club is identified and intertwined just as much as the Bunnies are intertwined with the Aboriginal community. Well, after the Bunnies won, a meme started circulating in Australia, and John showed it to me. It was absolutely disgusting. And I forget the exact wording, but it was something like, and it showed some pretty obviously Muslim Bulldogs fans, and they weren't, you know, they weren't looking particularly happy because, you know, their beloved team had lost. And the caption on it was something like, "Well, we lost." And then below it said, "We'll be heading home now." With the word "beheading" as one word. Not "we'll be heading home," will be heading home. As if because they lost a rugby match, these people were going to go and start a head lopping back in the neighborhood. It was absolutely disgusting. Which at least is one way of noting that the United States does not have a lock on Islamophobia. By the way, breaking news on the marriage front. Sparky sent me a note. Clark County, Nevada, where Vegas is, says issuing marriage licenses to same-sex couples is on hold due to pending motions in courts. Clark County says the Ninth Circuit is considering whether to recall its mandate. Oh, for probably based on what Anthony Kennedy did. Now, I would guess, and you know, we've got friends in the. In the Vegas area. I think of Jan and Jerry, for instance. I think our buddy Garrett's out there. Number of folks. I can see where Vegas would kind of like to have the marriage issue settled because they've got a whole industry there that's dedicated to having preachers who are dressed up as Elvis administer weddings. And probably dressed up as other people, too. And, of course, Vegas is that most transactionally capitalist of all American cities. And if there's a tourism dollar to be had on it, Vegas wants to have it. If there's a tourism dollar to be had on letting 9-year-olds shoot fully automatic Uzis across the border in Arizona, they want to do that. So, and to the same end, and much more peacefully, one would suspect, if Vegas could get an early leg up on the Marion drunk gay people scene, Vegas would like to do that. I'm guessing. Maybe I'm wrong. Kevin with an email from a few minutes ago regarding back when Dim Leader said God told him to attack Saddam. Kevin says, I wonder what Bush would have done if God had told him to kill himself rather than all those Iraqi people. Would Bush have had the faith to follow through on that request by God? Or maybe I'm reading that wrong. Would Bush have had the faith to follow through on that request by God? Or would have he dismissed the revelation from God as just a temptation from the devil? I think we all know the answer to that question, don't we? Well, it's funny. When God, and that's the interesting thing. When God goes talking to people, most of the time, God is telling people things they already want to hear. God is telling people that he hates the same people they already hate. I mean, God's funny that way. But it is. It's prayer meeting Wednesday, and we got all kinds of interesting stuff today. Been a while since we heard from Bill Donahue. Bill Donahue is head of this little group that pretty much consists of Bill Donahue and an email list called the Catholic League. I don't know if they play football, rugby, baseball, basketball, parcheesi, shuffleboard. I did, but they're the Catholic League. And he's real upset. I mean, and understand, Bill Donahue is one of these guys who misses the really fun Catholicism, you know, when they did things like burning witches to death. With it understood that witches was another word for anybody the church didn't agree with. Right? Yeah. He misses the Iron Maiden. He misses the thumbscrews. He looks back fondly on the career of one Torquemada. Back when some artiste made a big old chocolate Jesus statue, Bill got his email list so riled up that the artiste had to go into hiding because those good, God-fearing, upstanding Roman Catholic practitioners of the religion founded allegedly by the Prince of Peace were trying to kill the artiste. Why were they trying to kill the artiste? Because he had sculpted Jesus as a fully functioning human being made out of chocolate. Dark chocolate. Dark chocolate with fully represented genitals. You ever think about crucifixion? I think there's probably something wrong with me because I do. Not as in a, oh, wow, kind of way, but as in, you know, the mechanics of how it works. Because, see, Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, is always depicted hanging up there on the cross with his legs conveniently crossed so that he's sort of this sexless creature. Smooth as a Ken doll. When in fact, if he was afforded any human dignity at all, and insofar as crucifixion was reserved for the punishment of treasons and enemies of the state, such human dignity was probably rare. It's probably highly likely that he was a-hanging there on the cross as naked as the day he was born. And so, consequently, this artist, several years ago, sculpted a chocolate Jesus, dark chocolate, with all of the nasty bits. And the followers of the Prince of Peace, who was being depicted in said sculpture, flew into a homicidal frenzy that had been entirely created and advanced and incited by Bill Donahue. Well, Bill Donahue is mad. And like I said, I saw the Ben Affleck, Sam Harris, Bill Maher thing and went, well, that's boring. But daggum if it has not captured the national imagination. I've seen references to it now from major news programs 2 days running. The PR team over at the Bill Maher operation have got to be thrilled. You know, call me anything you want, just don't call me late for dinner. There's no such thing as bad PR. Just spell my name right, whatever it is you're saying. Let's see if we can have a little prayer meeting miracle and actually hear the actual words from good old Bill Donahue. Cross your fingers.
Here he is with Ben Affleck.
Oh, my God.
Let's watch this and listen to it.
There are voices that are oftentimes raised in opposition to these jihadists,
yes,
and to these extreme acts. But guess what? They don't get covered. They don't get exposed. And they're not given the same level of platform that we see the jihadists.
One reason they don't get exposed is because they're afraid to speak out. Because
that's
the only. It's the only religion that acts like the mafia that will fucking kill you if you say the wrong thing,
I mean,
draw the wrong picture, or write the wrong book.
So you do have.
And yet,
oddly enough, there's scads of imams who are out there saying, no, we don't agree with it. It ain't us. Right?
There's a reason why Ayaan Hirsi Ali needs bodyguards 24/7.
All right, so Ben Affleck ripped Maher on that exchange. Rosie O'Donnell said, oh, extremists in all religions, of course, and supported Affleck for ripping Maher. But these.
Because Rosie O'Donnell is right. There are extremists in all religions. This is the easy part of that analysis. It's not about Islam. It's not about Christianity. It's not about Judaism, Hinduism, Buddhism, animism. No. It's about extremism, fundamentalism. These are the dangerous people. And if you sat Bill Donahue down next to some ISIL guy over coffee or tea, those two would be fast friends as quick as they realized how much they have in common. Now, there's a global threat. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he's a... Bill Donahue waxes paranoid like I wax rhapsodic over, you know, food porn.
Hypocrites, because these are the same people. Don't they bash Christians all the time?
Well, in 1999, Ben Affleck starred in the anti-Catholic movie Dogma, which said that the Virgin Mary had a daughter through sex with Joseph, and then she went and worked in an abortion clinic. And they asked him about this. Is it anti-Catholic? He goes, it was definitely meant to push buttons. So we know he's not going to push the buttons of Muslims, just Catholics. Rosie O'Donnell, another one of these ex-Catholics, they are the worst Catholic bashers in the country. Same with Whoopi Goldberg.
And if we have any in the Horn Family Commune congregation, and I suspect we do, how do Catholics, because I can't speak to this, I can only tell you how a little Southern Baptist boy becomes a recovering Southern Baptist, how do Catholics become ex-Catholics? Because I'm guessing, contrary to what Newsmax contributor Bill Donahue says, I'm guessing that it's not a character flaw on the part of the ex-Catholics. I'm guessing that something had to happen to make them an ex-Catholic, because something had to happen to make me a recovering Southern Baptist. And I will always be a recovering Southern Baptist. I will never get well. That participial form of the verb recover will always be part of the description. Just like one will never be a healed or recovered alcoholic or drug addict. And I don't have any problems whatsoever with the comparison. You are always in recovery. So, let's get back to Bill. Because, you know, those ex-Catholics are the problem. You know, what they need is a good burning. Just pile the faggots around there. No, the wood kind. We're going to burn. This is getting confused. Pile the sticks around and you know what? You don't have an ex-Catholic problem anymore. You know, there's an old joke out there. I hope I get this right. There's an old joke out there about a Benedictine, or is it a Dominican? And a Jesuit talking over beers. And the Jesuit says, well, you know, my order was formed to fight the Protestant heresy. And the Benedictine says, well, my order was formed to fight the Albigensian heresy. The Jesuit says, well, what's the difference? Benedictine says, you don't see any Albigensians running around now, do you? We're all Albigensians now, my friend.
They're always bashing us. If they only showed 1 ounce of the sensitivity to Catholics that they show to Muslims, I wouldn't even have a job.
And why? Why do they? We got 30. Why do they not?
I wouldn't even have a job, except for the fact that you created your job for yourself, Bill. Or did you have a vision where the Blessed Mother told you to go out there and whip people into a frenzy so that they'd go into a homicidal rage against a sculptor and all the other nasty things you've done with your miserable existence.
Why do they show that sensitivity to Muslims? Why are they so on board with that?
I happen to think that...
Are they afraid?
I think that's only part of it. I think there's also a sense here. A lot of these people really don't like America. What does Islam have in common with the left? Maybe not in terms of ideology, but in terms of an animus against this country. And
holy cow! I mean, he went from zero to un-American in 1.3 seconds. If you're anti-Catholic, you're anti-American. See how it works? That's some unassailable reasoning, largely because it's unassailable, largely because it ain't reasoning.
I think it's palpable, and they don't like Jews either. And I'm so fed up with these phonies. Chris Hayes on MSNBC, they don't care at all about Catholic bashing. In fact, they contribute to it.
All right.
Wait just a minute. How'd Chris get into this? Chris wasn't on the panel with... Oh, wait. Chris said, count me in the Ben Affleck. Chris is Irish, was raised Irish Catholic. Are we to understand that Bill here is passing out? I think he passes out excommunications like Tootsie Pops at Halloween. Snickers and a Coke.
The great Bill Donahue, ladies and gentlemen. Always great to see you, my friend. We'll be...
Oh, shut up. Go and change your armor. Note from Michael in Madison. To that Catholic guy who mentioned Dogma, I'd like to point out that Affleck more recently wrote, directed, and starred in Argo. I remember critiques of that film alleging Islamophobia. So his point is kind of dumb. But then again, Michael, Bill Donahue is not kind of dumb. Bill Donahue is really, really no kidding platonic ideal dumb. A note of thanks coming in from Kate on the Front Range, by the way. Thanks for keeping the preacher man in the closet. Glad your tech problems are ironing out. Well, they're not really ironing out. I got ambitious. I had the hopes of bringing the gizmo on board to expand our telephonic capabilities, but yeah, I think this has like a whole Sunday written all over it. this just in from Steve. I said I didn't know what kind of a league the Catholic League was. Steve says, duh, it's a bingo league. Okay. I will bow to your obvious expertise, Steve. Oh yeah. If it's Wednesday. Oh wait. This also in from Michael. Subject line: when W talked to God. Back to the George Bush thing. George W. Bush almost choked himself to death with pretzels. Attempted self-asphyxiation. Auto-pretzilic? Never mind. He walked into doors in China, crashed a Segway, and collided a bicycle into a Scottish cop. Have we ever had such an accident-prone president? Seems to me maybe God was telling George W. Bush to kill himself. Or more likely, that same weird voice in his head that told him to kill the Iraqis was also telling him to kill himself. But in Mr. Magoo-like fashion, happenstance saved him from himself each time. God testing George's faith, I'm sure. I'm going to ride the Segway now. Crash. Mr. Magoo. That may be our first ever comparison between George W. Bush and Mr. Magoo, and I have to tell you, I like it. Yeah, a little background detail on the last use of the guillotine from Robert in Morgantown. The last use of the guillotine, the last person to be executed in France was Hamda Jandoubi, who was put to death in September 1977. I thought it was the late 70s. The death penalty was abolished in French law in 1981. It is now also forbidden by the French Constitution and by several human rights treaties to which France is a party. And hey, that means it only took 200 years. I mean, for the guillotine part, that is. But I'm sure that the right wing and the Repiglicans and the birthers and the deathers and the tenthers and the booger eaters, the libertarians and the birchers and the, I'm sure that they think that the ISIL is entirely self-taught on that head lopping. Note coming in from Carol. I'm ex-Catholic. It was pretty easy. I walked out the door when a priest told me I was the reason my ex-husband hit me. He assured me he was always a nice boy until he met the likes of me. I realized at that point in time that the priest was an enabler and a woman hater. So under the doctrines of the church, does that mean that that priest spends a little extra time in purgatory on the spit getting basted? I said basted, not wasted. And he doesn't get to enjoy the spit. I can't do anything right. Robert in Morgantown. Please don't insult Mr. Magoo like that. He's the most famous grad of rah-rah Rutgers, otherwise known as the University of New Jersey. Wow. I agree. You know, there was, when I got the email from Michael, Lottie, and I saw When George Bush Talks to God, isn't there some song? But Lottie notes, you know, that would be the title of a really great poem. Oh, that's very good, too. Anyone wishing to modify the clue game, maybe just change out a little bit on the board and a little bit on the cards. And as Waggy notes, new clue game cards. The preacher did it in the closet with the chocolate Jeebus. Oh, we got a bunch of good ones. We really, really do. But like I said, if it's prayer meeting Wednesday, the end must be near. Now, you know who Jan Crouch is. Jan Crouch makes Tammy Faye Baker look demure. And she has folks come and visit and talk to her about Jeebus in front of her fake fireplace. One of the people coming to talk to her in front of the fake fireplace lately being none other than Franklin, son of Billy. Franklin. And that's just weird. I can play one clip and then I can't play any more? No damn fair. Oh, okay.
Everyone says Franklin, do you...
Okay, let's get the whole thing.
Wherever I go... Everyone says, Franklin, do you think we're close?
To...
And I'll say, I feel that way. And they...
Oddly enough, nobody says that. I go places, nobody... Bob, do you think we're close? Well, I mean, you're a member of the Horn Family Commune Congregation, right? I mean, we're friends. Oh, I don't think that's what... No, that's not what Franklin means.
Everyone says, Franklin, do you think we're close? And I'll say, I feel that way. And they said, we do too. We feel that we are on the edge, that the Lord Jesus Christ could come back at any moment.
Is that a protective edge, Franklin? Just asking.
And that could happen. If you just look at, now there's a lot of things in the last events. When you read Matthew chapter 24, when you read Revelation, we know that Christ is coming back. We know that there's a rapture.
We know?
You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
We know?
Last events, when you read Matthew chapter 24, when you read Revelation, we know that Christ is coming back. We know that there's a rapture.
No. You believe. You don't know. We know, for instance, how many electrons and protons and neutrons there are in, say, a hydrogen atom. We know that the law of gravity is what makes the apple fall to the earth instead of floating up in the sky. We know that. We know that you are a huckster, Franklin. But you believe Jesus is coming back because, you know, you believe Jesus was real in the first place. You believe that young women, alma, which is mistranslated as virgin, as in female who has never had sex, but alma doesn't mean that. You think that teenage girls who have never had sex have babies. You believe that. And therein lies the difference between believing and knowing.
There's just, we don't know at what order sometimes some of these things. We have our opinions, but no one can actually know for sure. Only the Father in heaven knows when the Lord Jesus is coming back.
Only his hairdresser knows for sure.
But I believe there will be some persecution in this country. I'm not talking about the great tribulation, but I believe there's going to be persecution in this country, and we see it now.
Wait, there's going to be, future tense, and we see it now, present tense. Pick one, Franklin. Persecution. Wait, I got to be honest. I have not heard this clip. Jude sent this to me. I've not reviewed it. But there's going to be persecution, and it's happening now. So we've got verb tense troubles. Anybody want to take my bet that we're going to have to talk about bakers being compelled to make homo wedding cakes, or the fear that somehow or another preachers are going to have to start marrying gay people? 3, 2, 1.
In some sense that Hollywood has demonized people of faith, pastors and Christians, and for 50 years been poisoning the minds of people against the Church of Jesus Christ. And so here our foundation, this nation was born when the pilgrims came over and those that followed.
The nation was born when the pilgrims came over? That's 1620? I think there's 156 years there between never mind. This guy believes little girls who have never had sex have babies. What do you want?
Searching for freedom to worship God and to trust him. You can't even pray now at football games. You can't
even pray at football games. I may lose the bet. I didn't expect the football game thing. Well, you will get flagged for unsportsmanlike conduct if you're a Muslim and you put your head on the ground in the end zone. But I don't think that's what Franklin's talking about.
Can't have the Lord's Prayer read. I prayed after President Bush's inauguration, and he was sued because of my prayer because I prayed in Jesus' name. And we're living now in a time where we see the spirit of Antichrist is at the government level.
Gee, I just wonder who that spirit of Antichrist at the government level might be. I'm guessing it's not Satan. No, I'm pretty sure it's that one in Franklin's White House. Michael answering a question. When W talked to God, aha, yes, says Michael. It is a song by Connor Oberst, a.k.a. Bright Eyes. You know me. If I can make a music reference, however slight, I make it. Hey, let's check this out just for the fun of it. Shall we? Do let's.
When the president talks to God, are the conversations brief or long? Does he ask to rape our women's rights and send poor farm kids off to die? Does God suggest an oil hike when the president talks to God? When the president talks to God, are the consonants all hard or soft? Is he resolute all down the line? Is every issue black or white? Does what God say ever change his mind when the president talks to God? When the president talks to God, does he fake that drawl or merely nod? Agree which convicts should be killed, where prisons should be built and filled, which voter fraud must be concealed when the president talks to God? When the president talks to God, I wonder which one plays the better cop. We should find some jobs, the ghetto's broke. No, they're lazy, George, I say we don't. Just give them more liquor stores and dirty coke. That's what God recommends. When the president talks to God, do they drink near beer and go play golf? While they pick which countries to invade, which Muslim souls still can be saved? I guess God just calls a spade when the president talks to God. When president talks to God, does he ever think that maybe he's not? That voice is just inside his head when he kneels next to the presidential bed? Does he ever smell his own bullshit when the president talks to God? I doubt it. Kids, I doubt it.
Yeah, I remember hearing that now. Thank you very kindly, Michael. I had forgotten about it. That's awesome. Bright Eyes. When the president talks to God. This is Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn, and of course, this is also Conversation Radio. And consequently, if you are interested in participating in that conversation, I heartily encourage you to do so. You can reach the program dialing 304-574-8178 is the number to reach the program, or Skype to Skype, simply Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, if we are already friendly contacts in the Skype medium. Soon, we will add another number into that mix, but as I found out this evening, not quite yet. It's going to be a cool number, though. So let's... And a reminder, we are trying to, well, we're not trying to keep up with now, mercifully. We're trying to get out in front of fundraising, trying to raise $150 this evening like every other evening, and we are thus far at zero. PayPal button. Well, not so much a button, but the PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. To the phones we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's up, Bob?
Sounding, Jim.
Just enjoying your show. Fantastic. I missed like the first half hour, but...
So did I.
How'd you miss it?
We were about 20 minutes. We were about 20 minutes late getting to the air because
I only missed 10 minutes.
Yeah, see, I was arguing with electrons.
God damn it! I think that's an act of God.
Felt like one. Well, no. Yeah. Now let's make that an act of the devil.
6-1. Well,
yeah, really, 6-1, half dozen of another. Truer words have never been spoken on prayer meeting Wednesday, Jim.
You're talking about, Vegas, and I used to live there, and, and they can't wait. They can't wait, because that's what I like about Vegas. It's just true open capitalism in your face, and so this, pretend stuff, and I kind of like that, even though I'm not a capitalist, but. As opposed to what you see, everywhere else.
Yeah.
If you want to bet on this,
that's Pascal's wager, the idea that, well, like with if Christianity's fake and you believe it, you're a better person anyway, and it's no loss. But if it's right, your eternal soul is saved. It's a way,
right,
because we all know that the very essence of God is gambling.
Exactly. And the whole religion industrial complex thing, and I'm sure I told you, I had my little Buddhist time, and I wasn't a monk or anything, I was just like a lay member, and it's pretty cool at first, but right off the bat, that was the true Buddhism that I was practicing. Anything that differentiated was, not the true Buddhism. And I imagine it's the other sects, Catholic, Protestant. It's like once, and basically, then you if you really think about it for 3.5 seconds, they want you there for numbers, but they also want you there for put something in that petition, put something into the contribution plate, and even in Buddhism, even in the sect I was in, Nichiren Shoshu, they made that trip to Tibet. It would have been. But that would have been you could just basically on. I'd gone on a couple of trips to the head temple in Chicago, blah blah blah. Now this is 30 years ago, you would just basically showing you there as a body to kind of show. The numbers of the religion, this is how I look at it now. Back then, I don't know, there were aspects of it, and I started getting tired of it, after a couple of years, but, you understand what I'm saying, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And, so, I doubt many of those people are listening to your show. But, to me, it's so obvious. It's just, today is prayer meeting Wednesday. And, you know, by seeing other religions basically do kind of, if not similar, almost the exact same song and dance, you know, it's kind of weird. And, you know, and I think of myself as kind of smart. I kind of wonder why I kind of got caught up in it. But, you know, it just seemed cool to do for a while. And then just after a couple of years, it's just like, then I just got tired of it. And even if it's like, well, no, you don't have to really, you don't have to believe in an afterlife. But it actually, it wasn't so much afterlife focused from the Buddhist perspective, but it was just all over the place. I guess kind of like my commentary is at the moment.
You're fine, Jim. You're fine.
I've had a couple of alligators.
Very nice. Wait, okay, now wait a minute. Prithee, define said alligator.
Alligator, well, that's the name of the beer. I'm sorry, Andigators.
Okay, well, what style is it? Is it an IPA, a stout, a porter, pilsner, what?
It's an Abita. I think it's got a little bit of alcohol, a little bit higher alcohol content. That's kind of why I picked it up.
Yeah, I'm familiar with Abita. Lots of hops, yeah. Not so much hops.
Well, this is Andigator. I can't really. I'm in kind of on the. I'm actually on the back porch right now, so I can't really. And it's getting kind of dark over here.
Everything's going dark.
Yeah, but you know this. And the other weird thing. Okay, I'll jump to another subject. Which is kind of related. It's like my, you know, people I know, a lot of people I know, they just buy into it. And it's just, you try and talk logic or, you know, rational thought to them. And it is like a total waste of time.
Well, I mean, if it's a religious conversation, logic has about as much business in one of those as, ice in a desert. You know what I mean?
I mean, you could, I mean, you could kind of point this and that out. And I mean, I love the way you talk about the Bronze Age God, and that, you know, that the earth, you know, wasn't much less the center of the universe, or that, yeah, you know, and yet there's this God that knows everything, and he wouldn't tell everybody this.
Right.
And then he would, and not only that, he had in his back pocket, he was waiting for Galileo to come out. So Galileo would have to go under the persecution of the Catholic Church for having the gall, the unmitigated audacity to say that, no, we're not the center of the solar system, or something along those lines. And basically, he almost got excommunicated, which was a pretty big thing back then. And then you got that Bill O'Donnell freak. God, what a total freak, man.
Bill Donahue?
Yeah, Donahue. A total freak, man. I guess I'm just too enlightened or too lost. I guess I'm just a lost soul, Bob.
Well, you know what? Then we're all in pretty good company, because I've hung out with some of the unlost souls. And while I'm no great Billy Joel fan, I do love that line, I'd rather laugh with the sinners than cry with the saints, because sinners have much more fun.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's just like, I forgot the comic who did a great bit about that. I think it's Jim somebody. He does a nice atheist rant. I'm pretty sure it's kind of gone viral. He's like, basically the summation of this thing is, why do I want to spend eternity with all these fucking assholes, i.e. my family?
Well, I mean, I realize heaven's got to be a mighty big place, but I would not even want to run the remote possibility of running across and having to even say howdy to either Jerry Falwell or Adolf Hitler. And they're both in heaven, you know?
I have no doubt Adolf right before put the bullet in the...
No. He was baptized into the church as a baby. That shit don't wear off.
Oh.
And he was never excommunicated.
Well, see, I was 14.
Stalin was baptized into the church. Nobody ever did anything about that.
Well, see, I was 14 when I got baptized because my parents had got divorced, and my mother, and then what happened, the real push was desegregation started, and she couldn't have my, I went to public schools, but my younger brothers and sisters, she had to save them from the, I guess, the brown skin people. And so they were kind of getting, I don't know if harassed, but they just didn't have a confirmation date because my dad being the way, you know, I don't think my dad ever set foot in a church, but, you know, because he was a hardcore, well, not hardcore, atheist, he was just an atheist. I remember asking him, Dad, what do you think happened when I was about 18 or 19? And I was kind of like exploring Eastern philosophy, Buddhism, Taoism, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, I said, Dad, what do you think happens when you die? And my dad just looked at me and said, nothing. You're dead.
It's not like you know it.
So, yeah. But, yeah. I mean, he didn't, you know, and he never, even when I got into practicing Buddhism, he never, like, really, that's what works. He said, hey, it seems to be working for you fine, you know, but it lasted about 5 years. Then that got too dogmatic, because then that got, like, well, you have to tell people, in fact, that's almost from the get-go, but you kind of blow it off, but it's like, you got a shakabuku. That was the word to use, shakabuku. You know, like I would see you. Hey, Bob, how you doing? Want to come to a Buddhist meeting? And then you'd see the wonders and the miracles of Buddhism. And then there was like also these trips to Japan they would take to go see the head temple. And it was like, well, if you chant really hard. See, this is where I don't see that much difference between any religions whatsoever. But, you know, you raise your money to go take the trip, and you go to the head temple, which probably would have been pretty cool, but basically your whole time's going to just be one freaking Buddhist thing after another.
You were going to Zenziland.
Yeah. And you're just... And also, what happens is...
I got to tell you a story.
All right.
When I was just a little bitty teenage Baptist, and I was going off on a trip with my Latin class to Italy. You know, my parents were really, really proud to be able to send me over there. We were going to Rome and Pompeii and all of that. And I was excited as heck. I mean, it was funny. I came home from school one day and we were just talking because, you know, my parents and I did that kind of thing, just talking about class and things like that. I said, well, yeah, Latin class is going to go to Rome during what spring break. It was called AEA week. That was the week when the Alabama Education Association had its spring meeting. So instead of calling it spring break, we called it AEA week. But Latin class going to Rome during AEA week. And I didn't even ask to go. Lo and behold, my father and mother looked at me and said, well, would you like to go on that trip? I said, sure, but there's no way we can afford it. I said, nah, you're going. And we did. And I did. First plane trip, first flight, everything. And we got there. But before it, so before I was going, you know, time was kind of short. We had to really hustle to get the passport and all that. But I guess it got around, because a couple of the people that I went to church with were going too. And it got around, and the pastor, and this was a church that had 1,000, that boasted of having 1,000 members, big old Southern Baptist affair. That later on, they built themselves a recreation hall with a bowling alley in it. Never mind. But the pastor came around and had his very solemn pastoring face on and looked at me and said, now, I want you to be very careful. You know, Rome is the home of the Mary worshipers, the Catholics. And those, and you know, those people aren't really Christians.
I love that. I love that. Yeah.
And I just, you know, they're going to be talking to you about saints and everything, and about the Pope and everything, and all about all their Catholic stuff. And I just want you to remember, we're the true Christ. We are the true Church of Jesus Christ, not those Catholics. So I don't want you coming back here talking about any Catholic stuff as if it's really Christianity. You just be careful and be gird up your loins with the powers of the Holy Spirit and be strong. I shit you not.
I mean, it's like the sect I was in, then all of a sudden, after I was in it for about 5 or 6 years or whatever, and then he had the priesthood, and then you had like President Makeda. Oh, he was president of the Soka Gakkai. I guess any NSA members might remember that from way back. But there ended up being a big, and I kind of thought it ended up being a split. Although I was trying to reach my Buddhist nirvana, so I wasn't paying that much attention to it. And then after I, you know, quote unquote, quit practicing, shortly thereafter, there was a big split. Makeda tried to, you know, I mean, like I've heard, there's different Nichiren sects. They basically chant the same goddamn thing, yes. And, yeah, probably the same goddamn thing, but I think they have different silent prayers.
Yeah, but see, Jim, if you're going to have a religion that's going to be big and be able to make money and have big buildings and stuff, you have to make it simple for simple people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, for instance, the early Christian church, as it arises, it doesn't get hung up, the bishops got hung up on big questions like through the Spirit, by the Spirit, of the Spirit, for the Spirit, and they got into a head-lopping frenzy over that shit. Okay? They did. Council of Nicaea was not called because everybody wanted to have donuts. And then they were vicious to one another. But if you want to make it, if you want it to be the tool of social control that any ecclesiastical faith must be, then you got to have some really simple rules. In Tibet, you got to walk by the little spinning wheels the right way, and you got to spin them the right way. And, you know, if you spin enough of them, maybe your flame will go out when you die and you won't have to come back as a dung beetle or something. And if you bow your head the right way or whatever it is that one does in Hinduism to one of the many members of that pantheon, then, you know, you'll reincarnate the right way. And if you say 4 Hail Marys, a Pater Noster, and a Galliaeus Dominus Tuisa and Partes Thrace, you know, you won't spend quite so long in purgatory in Roman Catholicism. If you cross yourself backwards instead of forwards in Greek Orthodoxy, you'll be okay as long as you don't celebrate Easter the same time those heathen Catholics do. Okay? You got to make sure if you're some brand of Protestant, especially, you know, your Baptist and Methodist and stuff, you got to make sure that you're constantly asking forgiveness. Because it's there for the asking, but you got to ask. But at the end of the day, you know that once saved, always saved, so you're okay. I mean, you could get your AK-47 march into a first grade classroom, mow down 26 six-year-olds, and chop them into pieces, and Jesus is still going to let you through the door. Because you got to have simple rules for simple people.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
when in fact, if you look at the origins of all of the great faiths, they are actually quite complex personal examinations of the nature of life and reality. But you can't have people engaging in that in, say, India or Japan or Italy or the United States or France or Germany or Brazil. You can't have people engaging in that really deep spiritual consideration if you're trying to run a wholly predatory capitalist system. Because if you take any of these religious systems seriously, you will check out of the system so fast the system won't know you're gone. I don't mean suicide. I mean you'll start trying to find a way not to participate. Because the roots of capitalism and the roots of all these faith systems are completely at odds with each other. Make any sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, you know. And what's great is it kind of parallels with what Malloy is going to be doing later tonight, you know, his little reading of 1984. Yeah, he's reading a little bit at a time. I think that's excellent. And much more enlightening than the Bible or any Buddhist text or Taoist or
there's fascinating. See, if not to say that I have some sort of revelation or anything, because I don't, but if, for instance, you read the Old Testament as a series of cautionary tales, and if you realize that just about everybody being discussed in the Old Testament is to one degree or another a hopeless fuck-up,
yeah,
and you read it as a means of going, don't behave this way. Don't, you know, Abraham. Abraham is, you know, the freaking patriarch, right? Dude took his wife into Egypt and pimped her out to, I mean, they were married and stuff, had traditional family values and everything. And he marches her down into Egypt, pimps her out to Pharaoh and says, oh, no, that's not my wife, that's my sister. So Pharaoh, you know, strikes up a hot and heavy romance, and they start getting it on. And the next thing you know, poor old Egypt, sitting there not bothering anybody, and here comes old Jehovah God, just with Egypt for the fun of it. There's Pharaoh. Pharaoh's been lied to by the guy that God made a contract with, and he's been lied to, and he's getting it on with another man's wife who he's had represented is actually, you know, his sister. And here come the plagues. You know, because that's how it always works in the ancient world. You screw up, you don't know you're screwing up, and there's a plague, and that's how you find out you're screwing up, because the deities would rather kill a whole bunch of innocent people than just whisper in your ear and go, hey, quit that. Because it doesn't make for much of a story. So if you read, you know, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, all, you know, the prophets and the kings, and if you read them as stories of a whole bunch of really fucked up people, then the book actually kind of makes sense, because it turns into a guide for daily living that is actually providing you with examples of how not to behave. And, you know, oddly enough, this had been lost by the time that the New Testament was written. Because there's some reference out there in the Pauline letters or something where it refers to Lot as a godly man or an upright man or something like that. Lot was a freak. And I mean like a sick and twisted one. Not like, you know, not like a fun Rick James super freak. Mm-mm. No. So if you read it that way, you're in a better space. By the way, you got a high compliment from from Carol. You have been awarded the toaster for the evening, Jim.
Well, thank goodness.
Carol noted, why do I want to spend eternity with these fucking assholes? Carol said, laugh out loud moment, Jim. Toaster.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And, this whole thing. And then it's like,
One of these days, when we hit the lottery, Jim, I'm going to set up a toaster fulfillment center, and we're going to have people whose only job is to send out toasters every day.
Well, we could send it to the homeless people who don't have bread to toast, but they don't
where are they
going to
plug? If they're solar toasters.
Are they what?
If they're solar toasters, yeah, sure, why not? Hey, Jim, it's good talking to you. Enjoy the
rest of the beer.
The alligator.
Alligator. All right, I shall. And I love your show, as always. And as usual, the check's in the mail. Check you later.
All right, see you, Jim. Bye now. Our buddy Jim in Louisiana stand. Hey, thank you very much, Texas T. Getting us started on the fundraising this evening. Much obliged and much appreciated. We're out there in front of things right now, and it'd be really cool to stay that way. So line is now open again, 304-574-8178. I got to be careful because I'm about to get myself in trouble. I'm the son of a breast cancer survivor. And back when Mom was surviving breast cancer in 1972. She came home on my 10th birthday in 1973, minus a substantial chunk of her flesh. And no chemotherapy back then. It was all knives and radiation. They even got her sweat glands on one side and a whole lot of her musculature. And I remember her exercising every day. She had this little thing that hooked over the hallway door with pulleys on it, and she would grimace, and she wouldn't holler, but the tears would come running out of her eyes as she would pull these ropes, because she was absolutely determined that she was going to survive it and not walk out on a 10-year-old little boy, or check out on a 10-year-old little boy, and a husband who couldn't find his shoes without her. There was no Susan G. Komen for the Cure Foundation then. And I got to say, I'm kind of puked of all the pink. I'm not puked of the attempt to find meaningful cures for any cancer. Because living here in the Appalachian Sacrifice Zone, we need every possible cure we can get. But you know how I mentioned earlier that NPR will take anybody's money as long as the check clears? The Susan G. Komen Foundation is kind of the same way. This ain't funny. This is not parody. This is for real. The Susan G. Komen for the Cure Foundation has formed a partnership. In other words, has taken a shitload of money from Baker Hughes. Now, who's Baker Hughes? Baker Hughes is a humongous corporation engaged in the hydrocarbon drilling business. One of the things that they make are the great damn big giant drill bits that gouge into the earth to drill the holes, which will then be followed with massive amounts of sand and various chemicals and a whole bunch of water to frack shale formations under the earth and yield up natural gas. It's about as unnatural as it can get when you get right down to it. Baker Hughes is producing 1,000 hot pink drill bits this month, because October is Susan G. Komen month. You know, in the NFL, the refs have pink whistles, and the players wear pink socks. And I think it's all kind of cool because I like pink. Baker Hughes gave $100,000 to Susan G. Komen's foundation. And Susan G. Komen didn't waste a second wondering if maybe this was just a little bit too disgusting, a bit of pink washing for them to tolerate. Nope. The only question the Susan G. Komen Foundation asked was, hey, will the check clear? And as soon as whoever it was at Baker Hughes said, well, hell yeah, we're Baker Hughes. We got more money than God. We're in the drilling business. The hell you talking about will the check clear? We could write you a check 100 times that big, and they'd give it to you in cash if you wanted. Baker Hughes, of course, used the pink washing to try to take a little bit of the toxic stain off of the business they're engaged in. They said they're doing our bit for the cure. See what they did there? That's funny. Doing their bit for the cure. It's a drilling operation. They make drill bits. You get it there? And don't make me have to explain it to you. It's not funny if we have to explain the jokes, damn it. Each steel hot pink drill bit weighs between 85 and 260 pounds, and it's hand-painted at the Woodlands facility of Baker Hughes before being shipped out to the places that the people who buy Baker Hughes's drill bits are turning into hellish deathscapes. Charming. For the cure! The hope is that the roughneck who cracks open that container learns a little more about the disease that affects 200,000 women per year. Good God, if they start painting the goddamn D9 caterpillars on mountaintop removal sites pink, I'm going to have a fit. But this is an example of how charities get compromised by capitalism. Just had to share that. Or the cure. All right, let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Hey, Bill, what's up?
Well, you just hit me up. I went there because I lost my sister. It was ovarian with her. She was 35 years old. And then I got, as the only guy left to do it, I had to handle all those funeral arrangements and all that stuff. And oh, brother. Yeah, you know, the whole thing is so stupid, Bob, the whole... But, you know, I had to... Well, never mind. But I was going to ask you a question, but finally the answer came back to me. There's a place on the Potomac River, in the upper side of the river, which I think must be in West Virginia, where there's about 7 bends in the river that are real difficult. So they basically blew through a mountain. You ever seen that?
You talking about a tunnel?
Yeah, it's a tunnel they dug through, so the Potomac could go through the tunnel and avoid these things called the Pawpaw Bends.
Okay, yeah. I know where you're talking about.
Yeah.
Not an area that I'm particularly well familiar with, because there's no easy way to get to the eastern panhandle from down here.
Yeah, that's where, okay, that's where it is. Because I don't have a map that I can read. And I'm trying to figure, because that was, everything I read, it's always Virginia, Virginia, you know? But, like, Martinsville.
Martinsburg.
That whole area.
Martinsburg.
Martinsburg, yeah.
Yeah. New Martinsville is over in the western part of the state, and I have no idea where Old Martinsville is at all.
Well, Old Martinsville is on the opposite side of Potomac from Maryland, I think. Because that Potomac plays such a big part in any type of Civil War history, you know? But they were always going back and forth across the damn thing. And those guys kept finding new ways, and it's just, but it was such a, it changed phones. It was such a,
oh, much better.
I mean, there are times when the only thing left, the only righteous thing left is the same thing that your uncles and your dad went through in World War II. You have to, it's a shame, it's a hell of a mess, but this is what you have to do to sometimes contain sanity in this world, which there's very little of anyhow. My own lifestyle was an example of the lack of that stuff, I'll tell you. Oof. But yeah, I just wanted to talk to a native that wouldn't be able to, because I remember I meant to go up there and see that damn tower, but I was in, also in a hurry to get home. I had been down in the Outer Banks and, of course, they had to stop at Sharpsburg on the way back, you know, and a few other places in Virginia on the way back, Petersburg. Yeah, you know. But that's my story, but I'll just let it go and hope somebody gets on here. Of course, you're loaded with stuff. And when you talk about religion, it's like, God Almighty, they took me out of my house and dumped me in this Catholic place and, God, oh my, well, I'm altar boy and every, the whole nine, you can't believe that with my mouth. But what I liked about being altar boy, there was wine left over at the end of the service. Just guzzle it down, you know.
What a straw. I thought at the end of the mass, the priest had to wipe, to finish the wine, and then he has to, like wipe out the glass with a little hanky that he carries. And
yeah, but that was the chalice that they, as they called it. It was, and that damn thing was, had so much gold in it that you could have made a 30, 40 rings, good diamond rings. I mean, golden rings out of it, you know. And that was what he poured the wine in. It came in a thing basically that you brought the wine and the water to him. In a thing called a cruet.
Yeah, and you know, up until I saw my first mass, I thought the cruet was the thing that came with the that came for free with the package of Good Seasons Italian dressing, and it had lines on it for how much water and how much oil, or how much vinegar and how much oil or whatever.
Exactly. I mean, that was that whole man. You talk about a society, that whole church thing growing up and being controlled by these people. I mean, you have a nun standing there slapping you across the face, and Bob, I'm looking at this woman's rimless eyeglasses, and I'm measuring the distance from my left hand to her face. That's not good for a 10 or 11 year old kid to think that way, is it?
No.
But what do you do with people like that? The abuse of power was there. It was real there. Luckily, we had a couple good football coaches and such that were good guys. One of them had actually had lived there during the Depression, when there was so much. When I talk to people, when you talk about orphanages and places, but they say, "Well, why do they have so many?" Because so many people were croaking from things like tuberculosis and. Of course, you and I talk a lot about the pneumonia, you know, the flu there. What was it called in 1918?
Spanish influenza?
Spanish influenza, yeah. That killed a lot of people. Get anybody in your family history at all?
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't be here if the Spanish flu hadn't killed off my grandmother's fiancé. She married Mr. Kincaid instead.
Ah. Well, they brought back, that was straight off the European battlefields, that stuff. Yeah, that's another thing. You read anything about World War One, and you know, the artillery would come in and knock off five of your guys next to you in a trench, and there'd still be 15 guys laying. Where did you sleep? Well, slept with all those corpses. And, well, I could go after a joke, but I'm not about to go that hard. And by the way, Carol, if I'm not mistaken, somebody can Google this. There was a very famous Hollywood movie actress in the 50s named Carol Baker. I think she appeared in a
Tennessee Williams. Yeah, they're so easily confused, Bill. Just like me.
At my age, I got so many names around me that different people, you know.
What was that famous play, Night of the 16 Tons, or 16 Tons of Iguana?
Yeah, that was the one, yeah. You're on tonight. Yeah, but I think she appeared in a Tennessee Williams thing called Baby Doll with Carol Baker. Because it was, they get a lot of press.
And it's funny, Carol's sitting here saying, Baby Doll, Carol Baker, the queen of the B-movie.
Yeah, she's right. So the kid hit me, I said, did I tell anybody? Because, you know, through life, one thing I found about my generation is I met so many people going to colleges and schools that were here and gone, you know? And you never really knew them. You just knew who to talk to them and such. I spent 3 hours at a dentist's office yesterday, and maybe they're going to manufacture some teeth that I can do something besides play castanets with, you know, man. Anyhow, I'll let you go because I'm getting sick now. I was wondering about the Pawpaw Bands. I was going to ask you what the name of it was. This has been hitting me a lot in my old age. You think of something, and nothing comes.
Right.
So all of a sudden you go to Google it, and, oh, that's right, that's what it was.
Bing!
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just comes flying back. I guess, you know the problem, Bob, you've read so much, probably more than I have.
I'm not so sure.
You know what happens is that your brain gets so flooded with this stuff. And actually, this is how...
Yeah, that's how you wind up with that's how you wind up with 16 tons of the night iguana.
Yeah, exactly. You can't get these things... You can't compete. I kept thinking about the Pawpaw Bands, and I kept saying something about... No, that was Mississippi. Mississippi River.
You say Pawpaw Bends to me, and I think about what happens if you eat too many pawpaws. Oh, no, wait, that's the Pawpaw. No, that's the Pawpaw Runs.
Was that what it was, really? Because what do you do with that stuff? I'm not being a...
Oh, pawpaws are delicious. They're kind of ugly, but they're delicious.
Yeah, I know they're ugly, but... Then again,
they taste like a cross between a banana and custard.
Gee, there's one for you.
Yeah, ain't bad.
You know what I miss? I miss a lot is I have a nice bread machine, and for a few years I was baking a couple of loaves a week because I'm telling you, until you can find a place, now there's a deli where you can get the best Jewish rye, and there's an Italian place down on the hill. Well, you probably had some. You probably been through that little Italy section when you were here with your dad. You had to go somewhere around there, it seems, to get to the right to get anywhere.
Yeah.
And there's a bakery I went up
into Little Italy and got us carry out one night.
Where'd you go? You remember?
No, I don't.
Mama Santa's, maybe. Yeah.
I know it was awesome.
There's only one place left I can afford down there anyway. That's Mama Santa's. The rest of them are. Because what's happening, the old ethnic restaurants in this city are dying out. But we have some new ones. We have some great Mexican places.
There was a Mexican place right there on Euclid, up past the hospital. And you know how the Mexican joints will lay out the chips and the salsa for you when you first arrive? Well, these guys did that too, but they also brought a bowl of pickled vegetables. and it was carrots and onions and celery and strips of chili pepper. It was so hellfire hot. I mean, and I just jumped on them. I mean, I went, because I love that stuff. And I was sitting
there. What's your address?
I was sitting there at the table with my dad, and he was like, why do you do this to yourself? Because, I mean, it looked like I'd just run a race. The sweat was just pouring off of me. And you know, I'm just with an arm in the air going, más cerveza, por favor. You know, and it was wonderful. The beer was cold, and they actually, I said, how do you, and he told me. And basically, it's a matter of parboiling and blanching the vegetables, and then cooking them for a little while in vinegar with the fresh chilies in it, and then letting them just sit there and marinate and soak up all the hellfire. And it was good, especially with the tortilla.
If you were at the Meat Pueblo, which is about 116 something Eagle Avenue, if you were that far up. If you were at that place, you were about 3 steps from the Euclid Tavern where I spent 20 years.
That name sounds right, Mi Pueblo?
Yeah. Because I've eaten at their places on the west side of Cleveland, and they're just monsters, man. Just, they're tremendous. And you see a lot of that, and you see an awful lot of Thai food. And there's a Vietnamese restaurant on the west side of Cleveland that I used to eat a lot. I spent a lot of time in there. Because, you know, the so-called Chinese, because chop suey is about as Chinese as pasta, you know. Or even chow mein is not as Chinese as some of the Szechuan stuff.
I mean, you know, pizza gets invented in the United States. Most Chinese food gets invented in the United States. And they're all variations on poor people's food. I mean, what we recognize as Mexican food ain't Mexican food. It's Tex-Mex at best.
No.
I was about to say a little bit ago, on my list is still actually travel to Mexico and eat real Mexican food. You know, the tacos pastor off of some street vendor in Mexico City. Yeah, I want that. I want that bad.
Right, you just hit with street vendors. We used to have a black guy with a motor scooter, and he'd hit the bars after closing, and he'd have hot tamales he was selling. I don't know what they were. They were good and hot, but I don't know what the heck they were, you know.
They tasted good. They tasted good loaded, didn't they?
I think I could... I don't know, I could eat a hot dog bun by itself and think it was good if I was drunk enough.
Well, see.
There was one place we used to go to, a Chinese place downtown, and it was open till 5 in the morning, so at closing time, every musician you knew was there stuffing. And you went there in the daytime, and you'd never go back. There was a great guitar player named Bill Durango, who was up in New York City, and he talked about the automat that way. He said, you go to the automat after playing, and, man, it was good stuff. He said, you go in there in broad daylight to eat. He said, what did I come here for? You know, it's the old story. How much booze you got in you?
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll let you go. Maybe somebody can call in and talk about something. I mean, there's something
that's going on. I don't get Night of the 16-Ton Iguana every night, Bill. I mean, that's...
I love that, too, you know. Hey, I believe me, the callers are so good. Carol was usually right on the money, and tonight Jim was. Well, the guy I like a lot as far as his knowledge is, I'll have to call him West Virginia Jim.
Or South Carolina Jim, yeah.
Yeah, originally South Carolina, yeah. Anyway, you take care of yourself.
All right, you have a good one, Bill. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. That I had not thought about that Mexican place in Cleveland in years, but I think it was Mi Pueblo. And I came home and I made those vegetables, and we all just noshed. Oh, they were wonderful. I need to do that again sometime. Hey, line's open if you want to jump into the conversation, too. 304-574-8178. Or on Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn. Either way is just fine. Great crowd in the Horn chat room this evening. Good evening, Anatole, Carol, Cosmic Michael. Good evening, Devin. Good evening, Jan and Jerry. Good evening, John. Good evening, Kathy. Good evening, Kelly. Hi, M. Brandt. Hey, Mr. Gibson. Hey, R. Kellison. Good evening, Stockton Larry. Good evening, Texas T. Tim from L.A. Good evening, Waggy. And good evening, Will from Chicago. All capably moderated by indefatigable veteran chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom if you want to get into the conversation as well. 24 minutes past the hour. If you do Facebook, and I understand a lot of people don't, and let's face it, Facebook is mostly just icky. But if you do Facebook, you've seen these little polls. Answer 10 questions and we'll tell you what Beatles song you are or what Beatle you are. I just saw possibly the most unique one I've run across yet. The How Did You Die in a Past Life quiz. Now, I won't share these things because you have to give all kinds of access to you, and I won't do that. How did you die in a past life, Bob Kincaid? Burned at the stake for being a witch in Salem. Well, of course, why not? Who here is surprised? Apparently, one of the other alternatives is eaten by a T-Rex. So, silly stuff, right? Texas T was burned at the stake as well. How nice. It's good to have friends. Oh, let's see. What else and where this here prayer meeting Wednesday? How's about a visit to Dickland? You know, Dickland, the former head of the Southern Baptist Church, followers of the Prince of Peace. Yeah, this is one of those guys that probably inspired those two cats in North Carolina that we had the audio of yesterday, declaring that 90-year-old Jimmy Carter would go to hell for making Jesus a homo-loving hippie. It's not like that was new or that they came up with it on their own. No, we've got Dickland out there. Who engaged in a conversation with Todd Starnes over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. And there's a program out there called Washington Watch. Phew, brother. And, of course, Dickland is horribly, 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 unbearably upset, you know, just like Bill Donahue, that in some states a couple of guys are going to be able to pick out a China pattern and, you know, sign up for wedding registries and participate in that whole capitalist enterprise. Oh, Dickland is upset. He's very upset, I tell you.
What they just did violates the Constitution of the United States. The First Amendment says there'll be no governmental interference with the free exercise of religion.
See, that's how you know that these religious types are liars. Because the Supreme Court, as previously noted, did not declare that the Southern Baptist Church was going to have to start performing gay marriages. You know, there's not going to be a disco ball hanging over the altar at the First Memorial Baptist Church of Busted Knuckle, West Virginia. And so, no, there is no First Amendment implication whatsoever. And then there's that whole business of constitutional construction, which belongs to the Supreme Court of the United States, at least according to the holding in Marbury versus Madison, which has been around since the end of the Adams administration and the beginning of the Jefferson administration. So it's not like this is a Solon come lately kind of decision.
What they just did violates the Constitution of the United States.
Now, Now, because again, and sort of because that's the working theme for this evening, because Dickland can't see past his religious privilege. And boy, is it a white religious privilege. There's no religious component to marriage. At least there's no mandatory religious component to marriage. You know that under Pope Francis, the Roman Catholic Church right now is considering the question of whether or not people who have previously been divorced and are Roman Catholic should be allowed to take communion, because right now they're not, you know, their souls have to be damned to hell, you know, from getting divorced. Even let's say one's spouse beats the living bejesus out of one on a daily basis, and one's only recourse is divorce. If one is Roman Catholic, the church does not have an exception for that. You're going to burn. But under Pope Francis, they're actually considering whether or not they can find some sort of theological legerdemain which would permit them to give the cookie and a little sip of muscatel to somebody who'd been divorced. Anyway, back to Dickland.
Well,
okay.
The Human Rights Commission, unfortunately, is a government entity. And they are interfering with the free exercise of this company's freedom of their religious beliefs.
See, he's apparently operating on that Hobby Lobby fiction. That corporations have deeply held religious beliefs. But I think we're talking here about a for-profit. Well, you know, and I doubt, maybe, is it closely held? Kind of puts me in the mind of something. There's a young woman on YouTube, and I saw this a few months ago, and somehow or another this just worked around to be perfect for right now. A young woman on YouTube, and some of this is visual, but I think it'll translate. A young woman by the name of Megan McKay. And she is apparently Canadian. And oh my God, is she funny. Here then, the Hobby Lobby makeup tutorial.
Hi, everyone. So I'm not sure if you heard, but this closely held corporation called Hobby Lobby, which is a craft store company, recently went to the Supreme Court and said, we don't want to have to pay for women's contraception because we're Christian and we don't believe in that. And the Supreme Court said, sure. So in light of the recent ruling in the U.S. Supreme Court, which said that closely held corporations can deny their female employees access to contraception through their health plan, I thought I would do a really cool makeup tutorial that's a new Christian extremist look. Now, obviously, this isn't for all Christians. Most Christians prefer a, you know, more subtle, I guess, loving kind of look to their face. But for the 1% of Christians who identify as Christian extremists, this is a look for you. Hold on to your hats, because we're going on a wild ride, and it's going to bring you so close to Jesus. So you're going to want to start off by taking a prenatal vitamin, because you're going to get pregnant. Like, you're going to. You know what they say, use your womb to help Jesus out of the tomb. So I'm using this foundation. The color is called Ignore the Whole Middle Eastern Thing, Christ is White. And just, like, put it all over your face. You're going to like getting your hands dirty, you know what I mean? Just, like, getting them all up in your business and other people's business and just, like, you know. So now that you've put on your foundation, you're going to want to put on eye primer. Blend them all in, blend them together, make the blend seamless, like the, you know, like if you pretend your foundation's the church and like your eye primer's the state, you just want to make them look like they're the same thing. Like, I don't know what the word is, but not separated. So once your eyes are primed, you're going to want to pick a shadow. So I'm starting with a really nice rosy pink. It's called Life Begins at Conception. And you're just going to grab this pink and just put it on the outer corners. Next color you're going to pick is a really nice shimmery white, called Slut Shame. And you're just going to take it and you're just going to brush it over your lid, like very quickly, like fly, like breeze by it. You want everyone to know that it's there, but you don't want to, you know, admit that it's there. Just pretend it's not there. When in reality, it's there all the time. So now that your shadow's been dealt with, there's going to be a little bit of fallout. I like to call these fallen angels. And what you're going to want to do is just brush them aside and just send them to hell. Satan's problem now. So next is blush. You don't want to use too much blush because you don't want to look like a floozy. The color is dependent on your skin tone, but it should look like you've just thought of a world where women are sexually autonomous and you're like kind of embarrassed about it. That's not real. Get that out of here. So next comes liner. I've chosen blue just because I think Jesus would like blue, because he's a boy. Eyeliner is a really fun opportunity to do something fun and silly that you don't usually do. I'm going to try something quirky and fun and neat. Just something fun and silly. I've chosen the phrase Jesus loves crafts on my face. So next you're going to want to take some mascara to really separate those lashes. And I gotta say, nothing says corporations are people and should be treated like people like perfect lashes. Do you not agree? These look fantastic. The final step is lip color. Now, because we've gone really big with the eye, specifically the eye line on the lips, because Jesus should want to make out with you, but closed mouth only. I think that would lead to a closed mouth kiss with our Lord and Savior, do you not? Like, this is good. This is working out really well. And now you're ready to go out and face the world, because the world is your business. So everyone in the world's business is also your business. I'm Megan McKay. This is my Hobby Lobby Christian extremist look. This is not for all Christians. This is for a very special 1% of Christian followers. But I do hope that 1% has found this video and has enjoyed it. Anyway, I'll see you next week.
The visual at the end really is worth it. Not going to spoil it for you. Just look, Megan, M-E-G-A-N, McKay, M-A-C-K-A-Y. And the title of the video is Hobby Lobby Makeup Tutorial. Well, back to Dickland, which just sounds, you know, okay. I know. It sounds like a porn movie.
Alliance Defending Freedom is representing the owner of the T-shirt company in this instance, and I suspect they are going to appeal this, of course, but I think it certainly gives people the lay of the land and the hostility that's out there, not just in the public school sector, but also in the public marketplace and the business community as well. Christians are coming under attack for their beliefs.
Well, and it also shows that, once again, the ugly face of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender movement.
Hey, gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual people, did you know you guys have an ugly face? You cannot have a pretty face unless you are straight, 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 straight. Otherwise, you have an ugly face. These people have ugly spirits. Ugly essences. Yeah. Oh, God. Thanks to Philip. Philip jumped in, and between him and Texas Tea, we are only $120 away from the fundraising goal for this evening. Thank you kindly to both of you. It is, in fact, deeply appreciated. There's a little left. Do they even think about what they're saying? I mean, they realize that normal people hear them and understand what they're really getting at when they say the ugly face of. But again, they've got Christian religion, religious privilege, and they can say anything about anybody, and if we criticize them for it, they're being persecuted and we're being mean.
They are not a live and let live bunch. They are, we're going to ram this down your throat.
Thank you, Goddess of Irony. We were waiting. All these allegedly straight people who can't talk about anything relating to gay people without talking about things being rammed down other people. Oh, my God. The Goddess. There ain't no let up in her. Mm-mm, no. Okay. Goodbye, Dickland. Escape from Dickland. Oh! Meanwhile, since it is Prayer Meeting Wednesday. And by the way, you know, 20 minutes left in the program. If you want to be part of the conversation, jump in, 304-574-8178. Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, Horn, Bob Kincaid Horn. If you want to go Skype to Skype, bobkincaid@gmail.com is the email address. You can also reach me on Twitter, @BobKincaid, and on Facebook, Bob Kincaid. We also have a page that you can ask to join, the Head On Radio Network, the Horn. And we'd love to grow the numbers there. And it's a wonderful place to post your thoughts, your stories, things that grab you, things that you think ought to be part of the discussion on the program. Mike Huckabee is in a snit. Truly. This happened yesterday morning. Apparently there is a full day's rotation. It's not just Brian Fisher and his fabulous hair on American Family Radio Network of the American Family Association, Tupelo, Mississippi, Stan. No, there's a whole lineup, and apparently they've got a program called Today's Issues. And I guess the former governor Mike Huckabee was all set to explain what today's issues are. Let's check in. And then he had a hissy.
I'm utterly exasperated with Republicans and the so-called leadership of the Republicans who have abdicated on this issue when, if they continue this direction,
right,
they guarantee they're going to lose every election in the future. Guarantee it. And I don't understand why they want to lose, because a lot of Republicans, particularly in the establishment and those who live on the either left coast or those who live up in the bubbles of New York and Washington, are convinced that if we don't capitulate on the same-sex marriage issue, and if we don't raise the white flag of surrender and just accept the inevitable, then we're going to be losers. I tell you, Tim, it is the absolute opposite of that. And if the Republicans want to lose guys like me and a whole bunch of still God-fearing, Bible-believing people, go ahead and just abdicate on this issue. And while you're at it, go ahead and say abortion doesn't matter either.
Right.
Because at that point, you lose me. I'm gone.
Devoutly to be wished. Of course, he's beaten the stuffing out of a straw man, isn't he? Where are all these tolerant Republicans that just say, "Oh hell yeah, we're down with the marriage equality thing. Yeah, we're just gonna march right along. I mean, we done joined GLAD and PFLAG, and I mean, come on, absolutely. Because see, that I don't know." Because I got at least two county clerks and one silly freak of an attorney general who are keeping a bunch of people who love each other from being able to avail themselves of the full spectrum of constitutional rights here in West Virginia. Then there's Idaho. Then there's Nevada. Then there's Alabama Stan and Georgia Stan and Mississippi Stan. Where are these tolerant Republicans that apparently exist only in the thin gray settlings that slosh around over the great big old lizard brain between the ears of Governor Pastor Mike Huckabee, fabulous father that he is? Say whatever you want to say about my kids. To the best of my knowledge, none of them has lynched a dog and beaten it to death as it hung from a tree yet. Oh, Jesus. Where are you going to go, Mike? Going to join the Democrats, the Demoncrats, the Democrats? I mean, we got a big tent, and you can't come in. Freak. Oh, wait.
Right.
I'll become an independent. I'll start finding people that have guts to stand. I'm tired of this.
Remember when we didn't like the Iraq War? And the Mike Huckabees of the world said, "Well, y'all just need to leave America." Because I remember that. I guess we don't get to I guess we don't get to say that to the right wingers. By the way, note coming in from Philip. He says, my initial contribution this month has been limited by the need to contribute to two charitable organizations. The first is colostomies and colostomy bags for the far right. The plan is to surgically close at no cost to the patient the anuses of the right wing, give them colostomies, and supply a lifetime of free colostomy bags. The hope is that one can surgically put many right-wing assholes out of work or prevent them from work. We have suggested to the folks at Fox that they might take advantage of our liberal generosity. The second charity provides funds for postnatal abortions. Our goal is to abort as adults as many right-wing folks as possible. Funds are slowly coming in, but I figure in another 10 years, as fascism becomes even more evident in these disunited states, more will join the cause. We're hoping to dupe Rick Perry, he'll always be Dick to me, to be our spokesperson for the year, because we believe any transference that wonderful enthusiasm he shows for state homicide in Texas will give a boost to our far more worthy cause. Don't worry, says Philip, I won't forget the horn. Be well. Well, multitasking, right? Stockton Larry noting that would be a medical gag procedure, Philip. Just saying. And by the way, since it is prayer meeting Wednesday, got a little bit of gnat sound here. Let's see. What do we got? Now, what in the world could that be? I'll tell you what that is. That is the sound. That's what it sounded like this morning when Israeli forces stormed the compound of the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem. The Israeli attacks began this morning at about 7:30. By this morning, I mean today. The dateline on this is October 8th, 2014. Sources have confirmed Israeli police stormed the compound in anticipation of violent clashes provoked by Jewish extremists seeking to enter the holy Muslim compound. The Al-Aqsa Mosque... pretty sacred to, you know, Muslims. At least 12 Muslim worshipers at the mosque were injured. They fired tear gas, the Israeli occupation forces did. They fired tear gas and those little sound grenades like they used in Ferguson, Missouri, at people who were doing nothing more than engaging in worship. Then, because they were being attacked, Palestinian worshipers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque tried to prevent Israeli soldiers from entering into the mosque and held them off for about 2 hours. Then the Israeli forces took out clubs and began beating the hell out of the worshipers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. According to the Ma'an News Service, protesters did throw stones to try to keep the mosque from being raided. As a result, the Israeli forces responded with rubber bullets, tear gas, and sound grenades. Then the stun grenades that were fired into the mosque started a fire, which firefighters tried for 2 hours to extinguish, but were unable to because the Israeli police would not allow them to get to where they would fight the fire. Israeli troops have surrounded the area, and they're only letting Jewish settlers inside the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Noted is the fact that the Al-Aqsa Mosque is one of the most sacred shrines in Islam. Israeli forces are providing protection while extremist settlers are funneling into the Al-Aqsa compound. You know, once upon a time in Jerusalem, a couple of thousand years ago, a Gentile would be killed on the spot for entering into certain sectors of the temple. Religion. Or is it religion? Did I just fall into the Bill Maher trap? I don't know. Michael in Madison with an observation. Subject line, I heart Huckabee. Bob, did I hear the famously likable holy roller and former governor Mike Huckabee say he'd be an independent? Any chance he might run for POTUS, President of the United States, as an independent? Where do I send my money? Says Michael. I'm not even kidding. Run, Mike, run. You know it. Oh, that would be fun. And it would save him a heck of a lot of money from having to, but then he wouldn't be able to participate in the seemingly endless string of right-wing pig-licking primary pageants. Oh, God, you know, it's tiresome to even contemplate that. And I know, I get notes from folks like Kate saying, I'm just sick of the politics. I am too, but remember, you're supposed to be sick of it. You're supposed to be so sick of it that you don't participate at all. Because that's even more effective than challenging your right to vote directly. They don't have to put forward any effort. You just stay the heck home. But it is. It's depressing because it's just one stupid advertisement after another. And we're no sooner going to be done with this round in November. We might get a couple of months break. And then, baby, it's going to be 2015 and coffee breaks over. Back on your heads. By the way, anybody been watching Chris so far? Just wondering how the segment was going. I'll have to stay up this evening and watch it. And remember, a little program note, no program tomorrow and no program Friday. However, on Friday, hoping everyone will tune in to All In with Chris Hayes. I will be joining him at the set to engage in conversation. Whoa! Jeff Biggers next on with Chris? Cool! Our buddy! Hopefully he'll be talking about the release of the paperback version of his magnificent book, Reckoning at Eagle Creek. Dang! I gotta see this here. Time to fire up the miracle of the interweb tubes. So I guess Jeff is the end of the segment interview tonight. Wow, that's cool. All right, well, listen, I'm going to go ahead and get out of here then. You guys have a wonderful evening. Thanks for your participation this evening. Thank you to Philip and to Texas Tea for helping us out with fundraising this evening. And, gosh, we'll talk on more and Monday. I'll try to send some tweets and Facebook posts out along the way, too. Maybe some fabulous photographs of my second ever visit to New York City. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. Thank you to our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, and our brand new news ninja, Carol Baker. Thank you to John Fox for his continuing work on the brand new website. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT.org, ACHECT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.